the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hi, Mike!
Across the table from him, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Hey, Mike.
And right next to him, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
And joining us today is Tom Gleason. Tom was a sound effects editor for Hanna-Barbera and also was one of our guests a couple podcasts ago. So, Tom,
welcome back, Tom.
Hey. 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 Welcome back. Hey, everybody.
And to be honest, Tom's here because when we're done with the podcast, I got to do a job for him. But, But no, we wanted him back.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, last time I remember just asking a million questions and forcing him to tell stories until we just ran out of disk space.
That's right. And Tom was doing sound effects when when editing sound effects was actually a big deal.
Yes, except last time I remember you made it sound like he was about 115 years old.
Well, he's only 105.
116.
He looks good there.
Over 102. That's right. He's had a birthday since then.
But, so Tom, welcome back and we're going to have a good time and, I'll make sure it's quick so we can start your job afterwards.
I don't want you tired.
A few things. The 50th podcast was the last podcast. I don't know about you guys, but I had a really good time.
Yeah, that was great.
That was really fun. And Martin CD is doing really well on CD Baby.
Cool.
It's climbing the charts. And, it's really kind of cool to see an independent, from ground zero, really, because many of us have known Martin since he started recording it to the release, and it just, there's a certain amount of, energy and just excitement just seeing the album come out and now with some of the videos that are going to come out.
So is he out, busy promoting it these days?
He's promoting it. He's working on actually, his next CD. Cause I mean, once you got the pipeline all set up.
Oh yeah. Keep filling it.
Of keeping the product going. So I know he's been doing a lot of writing and except tonight he's not with us because he's at a UCLA for a class on medieval literature.
Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, medieval literature.
Wow.
That's what he tells you.
Really? I think he takes the class to justify buying the tights, though. Seriously. Not that he wears them at class, just when he wears them at the house. I think when he's reading medieval literature,
That's a lot more than I needed to know.
Is that something you want to tell us, Mike?
I'm just kidding.
Got matching
colors. He started glowing when he started talking about his tights. I don't know. Also, I think there's a guy trying to park a plane behind us. Is it?
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's 7-4 chirping in the background. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the 50th podcast was great. We got a lot of really great response. And I just want to let everybody know, we do know that our iTunes feed is broken, but it's almost fixed. We know what the problem is. It's a matter of just now applying the fix.
And unfortunately, everyone who cares can't hear you explain that.
Well, but you know what?
Maybe they'll tell their friends.
There's a lot of people that are sending me emails saying, your iTunes, it's broken. And we do know that, and we will be getting it fixed. And hopefully, by the time this podcast starts, it's, hopefully it's not even an issue, so.
Cool.
Maybe somebody out there has navigated their way through iTunes and found us, and that's how you're listening, and what I'm saying right now makes no sense, like most of the time. But moving forward, I wanted to catch up on a few things that we couldn't talk about on the last podcast because doing the live podcast, when I tried to go a little tech, I just felt like the crowd wasn't with us.
Was it freaking you out that they were just like staring at us?
That's right. I'm like, oh man. Cause come on. Who wants to go, look at a podcast?
Well, hey, a lot of them weren't techie people.
Yeah.
And they had seen the snack table.
Well, that's
on
true
the way
too.
In. So, their mind was just not with us.
That's true.
And but it seemed like they had a good time.
Oh, they had a great time. And afterwards, the party, the listening party. And, it was really great. But, some of the things I want to catch up, our number one, I upgraded finally to 7.4.
Hallelujah.
Due to Andrew's prodding, his gentle prodding.
It's all my fault.
And let me tell you, the upgrade from Pro Tools, I was in 6.9, and 6.9 was a great release of Pro Tools. I never had any problems with Pro Tools. And so far, 7.4 is pretty good, although it's taxing my system.
Making that fan roll.
Making that fan roll. And I noticed that right off the bat that it's a little resource, it's a little bit more resource hungry than 6.9.
It is, but it does a lot more.
Yeah, it does do a lot more with, the Elastic Audio and.
Oh, it's got Elastic Audio now.
Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations. Cool. 4 years later. Brilliant. And colors. I'm impressed. Must be professional.
They did do the Elastic Audio. They did do it pretty well.
I'll bet.
And if you use a control surface, you know, Pro Tools control surface like I do, it does add a lot of functionality past 6.9.
Yeah, well, it's definitely, I've done a couple projects on it and it's, I've worked on 7.3 and 7.4 for a while back at the other place where I mix, but it's kind of cool to have some of the same features. You don't have to worry about the compatibility.
And, now they just got to get their Leopard Act together.
But I will say that's true. They definitely have to get their Leopard Act together, especially on LE. But the upgrade, you know, this was a pretty substantial upgrade because I had to upgrade the OS on the computer, and then I had to upgrade the actual Pro Tool system. And it went really smooth, and I think the whole key to going to doing an upgrade like that is just to be super organized at the very beginning. And what I did is I made sure I downloaded all the installers for all my plugins that I have, because I've got a gazillion plugins, and I made sure I had the latest ones on those.
Big surprise is a lot of people didn't realize that some of the plugin upgrades from 6 compatible to 7 was a paid upgrade.
Well, yeah.
Like for Sony Oxford and some of the others, just a little surprise there.
Well, the good thing about, I did it at the right time where I actually didn't have to pay for any plugin upgrade, because I bought the first version. I bought into it when 7 just came out, even though I didn't install 7. So I had downloads
so you had
for
the latest ones.
6.9 and for 7. And
I was not so lucky.
You don't use cracks like Mike does. That's the problem.
but you know, if you're organized and you download all your installers beforehand, it made it a relatively painless install, although it did take forever to actually download all the installers.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was pretty painless, and 7.4 is pretty cool. My question to you guys is, you know, the fact that they don't have LE working on Leopard yet, I know a lot of people that are bailing on Pro Tools, especially going towards like Logic Studio and some of the other programs. Do you think
isn't it amazing that they're bailing and going to the workstation from the same company that makes the operating system that made Pro Tools LE not work? I mean,
but whose responsibility is that, though? That's exactly.
Well, it's up to each company.
Well, it's both. But I mean, the same way DigiDesign has people who do nothing but work with third-party developers to make sure their plugins work, Apple does the same thing for companies that write software. I mean, they have people that say, "All right, next OS is going to be this. It's going to change this. You got to do, you know, whatever you have to do to make it compatible." And apparently, there are just some major, major things that were changed and are not happening.
It's just obviously a matter of time. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened to Digi, and they always end up catching up and doing it well eventually.
It's kind of weird, though, that people would be jumping ship on an audio program because of the operating system. Because if you need to just get work done
right
in an audio program and you know Pro Tools, well, then you just wouldn't have put in Leopard. Like, you really have to put in Leopard?
Well, it's if you buy a new computer, basically.
That's the thing, if you buy a new...
Well, but HD is compatible with Leopard for the new computers, right? I mean, they got that out within about a week.
For the latest one.
Yeah, the HD is, but the LE, a lot of people use LE. I mean, I'm amazed at how many people, you know, do big projects on LE.
It's definitely a problem, but it'll be resolved.
I just, you know, when I went to NAB and you see the proliferation of Final Cut and you see the proliferation of third-party programs that support Final Cut. And there was a time when, you know, Avid was the big kahuna, and they're not the big kahuna anymore when it comes to video editors. And Apple came in there, and they came up with a low-cost alternative, and it's not as good, but it's good. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, we're going to see something similar happen in the audio world. You know, because there was a time where everybody was editing on Avid, and they were, you know, people were saying, "Oh, they got too much market share. We've done this, and too many people doing that." But I don't know. You see,
well,
Apple,
but the smart thing is that Digi does seem to keep changing enough that, I mean, I think they know that because they took over from Fairlight and Synclavier,
right,
and all the large,
right,
format disc recorders and things, and that, you know, that was the sea change there, and I think they're very aware of it. So they've got to have some plans,
or maybe it's,
you know,
inevitable
to try and stay there. Yeah, I mean,
maybe it's going to happen, and they're just going to survive, and someone's going to come over, and Apple's going to hit the same thing, and, you know, inevitably something's going to happen with Logic Studio.
Yeah, I mean, I think though it's easy to say, well, yeah, Logic works. Well, of course it does because it's the same company, and also, right, I mean, of all of the audio apps, Pro Tools, especially with the hardware, needs to do a lot more under the hood than any of those programs do. Because anything running natively, the OS supplies everything for you. You know, you get,
right,
an API when you're programming, and okay, you got to do this to do that. Fine, no problem. And it's up to Apple to actually make sure that it works. Whereas with Digi, they're doing a lot of stuff directly. They talk to their own hardware. They're streaming stuff all over the place. So it's a lot more susceptible to changes that may not even be documented outside of Apple.
But I think Digi has a lot of arrogance on their side too. The fact that, you know, that you have to pay $1,000 to get timecode on LE, that's ridiculous. You know, why can't they just put that in the program? I mean, when you look at something like Final Cut Studio, or you look at Nuendo, or you look at any of the programs that are out there, there's definitely, I can't think of anything other than the word of they're just, you know, being arrogant. They're going to pay that.
They're just
following
what the market is willing to do. If they're selling them like hotcakes, then they're being proven right.
But I think that's the wrong strategy. I think you have to anticipate where the market's going, especially with our economy and people with, you know, bigger bang for the buck. I don't know. I was just noticing that, you know, are we in that moment before, you know, we see some transitions? Another company that I was really wondering about was actually Steinberg and Nuendo. You know, you don't hear a lot of buzz about that. And I love Steinberg. Don't get me wrong. You know, I their products are great. Their third party, you know, their instruments are great. But you just don't catch a buzz about Nuendo like you used to be. There was a time where Nuendo was like trying to make that push into post production and people were supporting it, and they had the controllers that were coming out for it. Euphonics was trying to do that controller with the kind of like the Series 5, but a controller, uh-huh, for Nuendo. But you don't hear that anymore. And I'm just wondering what's happening over
there. Well, there's mostly something big coming out because Yamaha, as you know, bought them.
Right.
And they're a pretty good company for you know, professional audio. So they may well have something up their sleeve where they've got a big old console coming out that's got Nuendo embedded in it, and it could well be. I mean, I don't know. I've seen the keyboard musical keyboards coming out now with Cubase, I think 32 they call it or something like it. It's 32 tracks of Cubase sequencing, right, inside a hardware. You know, it's possible. It's,
but is it also possible that, you know, they're going the opcode route? You know?
Well, no. I mean, they were going to disappear, they would have already, because,
right,
when they were owned by
Pinnacle,
their,
right,
previous owner,
right,
that nearly ran them into the ground.
No, I understand.
Yeah, that
would have
been their opcode moment.
That would have been.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when Pinnacle bought Steinberg, I was like, oh god, I couldn't think of the worst the only other company that was really worse than Steinberg at that stage was Pinnacle, and it was absolutely amazing.
So
they didn't take them down.
As heavy Nuendo users, you guys aren't concerned. You don't think there's not anything. I just don't think
they're doing a good job of marketing it. It's an amazing product.
But what about the R&D? I don't see any product coming from
that. Oh, no,
there's
constantly new features. And, yeah, there's a lot of amazing development coming out.
I mean, it's a crazy Nuendo. I mean, we're joking about Pro Tools. You know me. I was
No, I understand.
Them. But if you really do – I mean, I'm not talking about compatibility because of everybody else having – a majority of people have Pro Tools. But if you really compare the two, it's crazy, the one – application offers so much more than the other one does, which has the market share. I mean, Pro Tools though is nicely stable and nicely, you know, all around the world. But if you compare the two at a little bit of the price, you know, it's pretty good.
No,
any hardware you want.
Well, no, it's
smoking.
Definitely great. I mean, you've got the OMF compatibility, you've got timecode, you've got all those features that you need. You just don't hear hype, and you just don't hear about them. I mean, they're
it's
awfully,
just marketing.
They're awfully quiet.
They're terrible.
You don't see any new products coming out. Nothing innovative. You know, you don't see the next virtual guitarist, not Virtual Guitarist 4, but like that type of an instrument. You just, It's just really silent. And so I don't know. I'm just wondering if they are.
I think part of it is, I don't think Steinberg's been anywhere near as good at keeping the relationships with the instrument manufacturers as Digi has. There seems to be a lot more loyalty, and there have been a lot of times where a company developed a virtual instrument that became a Steinberg product, and then they parted ways, and then that kills the product.
Right.
You know, and there are a lot of very successful plug-in companies that actually at one point were teamed with Steinberg,
right,
and now they're off on their own, and that meant Steinberg lost a product.
And do you think, what about the people just leaving for programs such as, you know, Ableton? Is Ableton's getting more and more sophisticated and doing more and more doll-like things?
Except that ruins it to me. It's like piling on a whole bunch of features it doesn't need. I realize they have to do something to be able to come out with another version. But
yeah, I mean, this last version where they split the product basically into their studio, you know, Ableton Live 7 Studio, where you get the instruments and then you still have Ableton Live. It's definitely a big step, and it's definitely going in that direction, is to taking on some of the Cubases.
I think for the professional, I mean, people that are cutting, they like want a tape machine, essentially, to actually a reliable digital recording system. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I don't really see the Ableton gaining. It's more of like a writer's, a DJ kind of great. I love it, but I don't really see it being in a
recording
studio.
Yeah, it could do that kind of work, but it's just not what people are ever going to think of it for, because that's not what made it unique. I think
part of
the mistake these companies make is they start out with something that's incredibly unique and incredibly cool and incredibly their own. And then as time goes on, they add feature after feature to make it much more just like everybody else. You know, it's not like version 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 of Ableton Live were as revolutionary as the first couple were. And
they
I think that's a big mistake.
Well,
but you know what?
Really
but think of other companies like think of companies like Celemony, you know, with the new Melodyne that they're showing.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be phenomenal.
Where you can pick notes apart. Melodyne's already been out a long time, and yet they've managed to now up the game with something that everybody has their jaws on the floor about.
Right.
Now, people don't have it yet, so we don't know how well it works, but they've certainly done an amazing job at getting the pre-release news out. You know, but Melodyne, they could have also said, well, guess what? Now we're also you know, your sound effects editing machine, and we're your vocal recording thing, and now we're a DAW. And
Vocoder, yeah.
Now we have MIDI sequencing. It's like, you know what? That's not what we need out of that program. And I kind of feel like a bunch of the other instruments, like Ableton Live, went down that wrong road, just adding features for the sake of adding features.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's definitely they're definitely picking up users, and it's a pretty tight suite the way they have it, you know, and the way it's kind of core-esque, and the fact that you can get, you know, mega patches with all their different instruments, and you can, you know, put that as one giant patch and get some really cool results. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But I don't know. This is just a couple of my observations when I was over at NAB looking at just what was happening and where the innovation was, because, you know, you're trying to figure out where you're going to go.
You know what I'd like if they could make it is Reason in a hardware box. I'd really dig that. You know, like you guys use Reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Reason.
It's one of my favorite programs. It's really great. I love Ableton too as well. I think it's such a great little, but I'd love to have it as a standalone, you know, as like a little standalone rack, more or less, you know, in a silly way.
Well, Reason's a good example of what Rob was saying about a program that they know their roots and they know what they do really well.
And they have a sound that it sounds. It's got its own character. It's nice.
Yeah. And the fact that they don't have the DAW functionality.
I mean, it always had that kind of lame sequencer built in, and they've made it better over time, but they're not trying to be the DAW. They're not trying to
I love this swing. It swings nicely.
Yeah, it's just a great program.
It's got a great feel to it.
It's interesting because in hearing what you were saying, Rob, I think what happens with companies is competition. Competition, you know, they listen too much to the end user instead of, you know, why are they there, how they get there, and they don't follow that path.
It's amazing how they lose sight of what got them there in the first place.
You can't be everything to everybody.
No.
It's totally impossible, but too many companies do try that.
We've talked about that also just from being a person who works in the audio industry. People like a specialist. I mean, it's much better for you to be thought of as good at a particular thing than someone who just bills himself as being good at everything, because everybody knows that nobody's good at everything. So if you're a specialist
except
and
us.
You can find a niche,
except us,
of course. But, you know, find that niche, and it's just much easier and much more believable to be the best at a thing rather than at everything.
Yeah. And you can't – I mean, all the equipment, even just the stuff that's been mentioned here already, and in this podcast, it's kind of like you can't spend that much time with all these pieces and figure out how they work in different
really
situations.
True.
And it's like, it's overkill. So at some point, you just, as an end user, you just have to say, this is the direction I feel is the best for me at this point in time. Maybe not only for cost, but for time consumption.
Uh-huh.
But, and just go with it until something else, the next wow comes out and you have to have it.
And there'll be a wow every now and then. But like with, I like that with Melodyne, I just think that's the program I use to tune stuff.
Yeah.
End of story. With Ableton Live, if I'm working with loops, well, do I try putting it in there or do I try splitting it up and putting it in Reason? Or am I going to use the built-in to Cubase stuff? Or am I going to use the time stuff in Pro Tools? You know, there's so many different options. But if there was one program that was for multi-track timing the way Melodyne is for pitch,
right,
you know, I would always just go to that. And these programs all integrate really well now. So if there was, you know, a Rewire client that was just like the ultimate time program,
right,
there would have been a market for that.
Let me ask you that. I agree with you 100%. Let me ask you, like Pro Tools, when Pro Tools first came out, it was essentially a hard disk recording system, and it didn't have MIDI, obviously. But now it implemented it MIDI, and now it's becoming like a composer, it's trying to be a composer's tool as well, which is not really 100% succeeding at, I as far as I can tell anyway.
Right.
Do you think that like a company like Pro Tools should have said, hey, we make multi-track, real stable, great hardware, and leave
I
it?
Don't think they could have though, because no, I think
the competition.
Because they're a multi-track program, and
right,
some of those tracks have to be MIDI.
MIDI, yeah. Right.
I mean, I think that's just where they had to go. Now, have they really served the MIDI community? Well, no, but at the same time, I was a Studio Vision running in the background with Pro Tools guy for years and years and years, and then Studio Vision went away, and the MIDI implementation was good enough for what I was doing. And it was, you know, I was working with film composers at that point, and we made it work. It's not great, but it definitely, it does the job. And the one thing that Digi is great at is you can figure out how the program thinks. And as soon as you know how the program thinks, you know how to run everything in the program. There might be 100 features you don't even know about. But if you can edit audio, you can edit MIDI. Period.
Right.
Done. There's no difference in the way you treat them.
Right. So it should absolutely.
So they're really smart that way, and I think they had to do it.
Right. They did have to do it because the competition was doing it. And the truth is, for basic stuff, it's completely fine.
It is.
You know,
fine.
The timing is very solid. You know, back
and you get
in the
your waveform
days,
right there to line it up with. You can group MIDI and audio together and edit them as one thing. So,
yeah,
you know,
cool.
I mean, all the
yeah.
stuff you have to be able to do,
yeah.
you can do.
I mean, it's no Nuendo.
Well, it's no logic. It's no.
No, Nuendo doesn't do that better, obviously. But no, I'm just saying, asking you the question. So, as Pro Tools, a multi-track, and Andrew really is a good point, it's a multi-track recorder. So, MIDI being one of the tracks, uh-huh. that's why it does it, you know.
And it does it reasonably well. I mean, I don't use it for my main sequencer, but every now and then, if I just have to do something quick, it's nice to just see the MIDI right in there on the track. You know, in my studio, most of the time, it's a whole bunch of computers all synchronized together, and each one is doing bits and pieces in the project.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, we'll have 100 tracks in Pro Tools, and we'll need one or two MIDI tracks. And it's nice not to have to synchronize another computer and have
Absolutely.
It all live. And also, if you're using some of the virtual instruments within Pro Tools, you know, if you're using the Virus or whatever, it's cool that the MIDI is right there and the instrument itself is a plugin.
Right.
And it's just, it's easy, and it acts so seamlessly. It's like having an audio track that you could then edit the notes on.
I mean, there's plenty they don't have right, but the one thing they do have right is, in general, the way they implement stuff when they do it, and the fact that it's always solid. It's never like, there's some MIDI, but the timing kind of sucks, and so there are bugs, obviously, but the way they design the features is really consistent and pretty solid.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm really hoping that all these companies, to be honest, will continue and evolve, and none of them fall behind, because I think competition between all of them is really healthy. I think it keeps everybody the checks and balances. You know, if there's a feature that everybody wants, eventually you wait long enough, your program's going to get it.
I wish they would just always keep one eye out though towards not just trying to do what everybody else is doing. There's a lot of sameness that seems to be happening.
I mean,
the new Logic is a huge step forward. Like if you're doing your vocals there and you have alternate takes and you need to be able to manage your media and stuff,
right,
it's actually a major step up and it's really cool. And I don't know if it's gotten, you know, the notoriety it should, because they actually, in a lot of ways, it's much easier to build a vocal performance in Logic now than in Pro Tools.
Right.
And I don't think it's going to matter, because I don't think the word has gotten out enough, and I don't think anybody's going to abandon Pro Tools for it. I know I'm not going to. But it's nice to know that they do something like that very, very well. And a lot of the producers I'm working with now are tracking all their vocals in Logic just because it's so easy to build a complex performance out of a bunch of
tapes. What about skipping forward? Say, imaginarily, in like 5 years' time, where you buy a computer or whatever it is, it's an open framework, a common open framework, and you say, hey, I want to use Cubase's MIDI sequencing, I want Ableton Live's looping, and I want Pro Tools' hard drive recording. And it would be like a massive plugin where it would interface. That'd be really nice.
Well, that's what Rewire is sort of supposed to be. You know, right. Where you could be using these different things and they're all perfectly integrated.
You know, that's probably doable now, though, with the power of computers that are coming out. I bet somebody could write a super Rewire host that does nothing but manage Rewire.
But the problem is conflicting hardware.
Yeah,
hardware.
No, I understand.
But if you could, just say, I want to use audio of Pro Tools. I like how that works. I want the MIDI of Cubase or whatever. You know.
Well, Digi makes it where you can use those other apps on their hardware, but then you get limited I.O., right? You get... One I.O.
Box. No, I don't think so. It used to be you use all the I.O.
Yeah.
It's all there.
You can use...
There's some limitation. If something has to use core audio, you can't get to all of your hardware, I don't think.
No. If it has to use core audio, no. But if they're DAE drivers, then it's the full
right.
set of hardware.
But a lot of these companies are never going to write DAE drivers.
Right.
That's the problem. And they're all going to work with core audio. And Digi made the decision for whatever reason to limit the core audio to just stereo.
Well,
no, I think it's 8
or 1 box anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see. That would be great, though. That'd be a great feature in 5 years if you could have that kind of object module, you know, performance of your sequences.
Bedouin.
Bedouin is cool.
Very happening.
But way too complicated to ever get a foothold in this conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
What is it? Just tell us really quick.
Essentially what I was talking about in a software form, but you have modules, little software modules. You have a folder, let's say, of little icons.
Right.
And you can say, okay, I want an oscillator and build my own sample.
Oh, kind of like Max.
It's like Reactor for workstations.
It's like Max, but like on Ecstasy. It's trippy. But it works really well, and you can split audio, and you can do MIDI routing, and you can put real-time plugins and do calculations and all weird things on MIDI. Say, I want every note to be this, and delay. You can go really mad. Check it out.
Well, that's Max. Max can do the same thing.
Right.
But this is even...
Because you can, it's a Rewire app. Well, Max is now, but you can run it. I actually run it, in parallel on my computer as a VST host, because sometimes in Cubase or Nuendo, when you have a lot of VST apps, and you want to swap songs, it's a pain in the butt. So I just use it as a stand outside MIDI box on a MIDI host, basically, on some on my computer. It's pretty cool. Bedouin, you should check it out. It's free to download and try it out.
How is it spelled?
Bidule, and the company, it's a French company called Plogue, Plogue. I must be making a horrible mess.
If you Google Bedouin, you'll...
Bedouin, yeah, exactly. And Bedouin means a little thing. That's the... It's very cool.
You know, you bring up a good point though with this product. You're starting to see a lot of
open architecture.
Yeah, open architecture. A lot of modular, object oriented programming environments where you can create your own synths and where you can create your own DAWs and things like that.
That's my prediction. I reckon in 15 years' time, Microsoft will be bye-bye and everything will be open architecture, including all these apps.
Feels like it's going that way.
As long as they take Vista with them, then that's okay. Then go. I just had to downgrade a computer because it was – I thought the computer literally was broken because the performance was so bad. And I bought it and had Vista installed, and it just was really horrible. And so I downgraded. And the thing runs like a top. I mean, it's just this – great.
They're going to stop supporting
computer.
It soon, XP.
I know.
No, you know what? The outcry. They've already postponed the date when they're going to.
That company
kill XP.
Is so badly run. It's
well, do
a
you guys,
joke.
Let me
really
ask you before we take
really
a break. Do you run Vista on any of your music
machines?
Absolutely
nothing.
Rob, do you run Vista? And I know you guys are pretty heavy Windows user.
I got my father a laptop that had Vista on it already, and it runs fine. That is it.
Really? Yeah.
That's my complete Vista experience.
Yeah, the Vista.
But if you want to update it or install anything, it's a pain.
You know what? Watch TV. Just relax. Don't even mess with it. You're just going to ruin your evening. It's not going to improve your life in magical ways.
I agree.
You know, Vista. It's just a new way to spell Windows ME. I mean, really, it's just this bastard of an OS that just needs to
If you look at Windows, and I don't want to bag on Windows, but it's about the worst thing ever invented. I really think it sucks.
Oh, as long as you don't want to bag on it.
No, but I was being nice. That's the nice thing. But Windows XP is the only decent, 2000 and XP is the only thing they ever got right.
They got it really right. XP's great.
But, I mean, how long did it take? I mean, I got like hot fixes, like 17,000 of them.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, I know it's a big program, but come on, guys.
The fact is it works so good. And why are you going to just throw it all out and try to you know come up with this horrible
sell an upgrade.
OS?
Yeah, marketing.
Yeah, they got.
Yeah,
sell
but
upgrade.
You know what? It's so bad. I could not believe the performance improvement in my computer.
I will say I have seen it. Like seriously, I did get my father this little Sony laptop, and Vista on it is unbelievably smooth and quick and nice. So I
that's good.
Yeah, but I bet if you downgraded to XP,
it'd be even nicer. But you know what? It never feels like it's struggling at all. It's really, really smooth.
What do you run on it? Just word processing?
Yeah, just basic stuff.
Well, it's probably okay.
Yeah, if you run a Windows
he runs
stuff.
And he comes up with his own
thing. You're playing solitaire. It's fine.
Yeah. It's absolutely fine. But don't connect to the internet, whatever you do. Yeah. Would you like to? You sure you want to connect to the internet? Yes.
All I know is I just, boy, Vista is just, that's, it's the worst.
I tell you, it makes me very grateful for Apple, because I mean, I love Apple. I haven't been a great user in the last couple of years, but it's amazing that we have that alternative.
Oh no, it's great.
I mean, before that was Atari. That was it.
Competition.
Yeah.
Atari was rad.
Rad, it was.
An Amiga too. Amiga should have won.
And the Sinclair.
I had a ZX Sinclair.
I bet you did.
I did indeed.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about a few other things. I'm going to give you guys an update on the great vocal search that I did through Craigslist. Which was an adventure.
Oh, did
I've been checking
that?
The police blotters. I haven't seen anything about that.
So we'll take a break, and we'll put you guys on the website.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were totally and completely crucifying Microsoft Vista. So I just want to bring everybody.
I think they did it to themselves, actually.
just point it out. Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to give you guys an update on my search for a vocalist.
Yes.
And I put an ad out in Craigslist, and I got a ton of response, right? And I narrowed it down to about 10 people, and from those 10 people that I invited to meet with at my studio. Against your guys.
It sounds like a Dateline NBC. I
thought it was going to say a hotel.
Against your guys' advice.
Yeah. How'd that work out?
Actually, it was okay. I'm still here and nothing was stolen. And, you know, it's been a couple weeks. But I will tell you, I didn't find that gem that I was looking for. And I think I'm going to take some of your advice and I'm going to try to work my network and see if I can do through contacts and things like that. As a matter of fact, I've already asked Bobby and he has a couple people, but I really wanted to see if I could find, you know, somebody out there. And some of the people may have been really serious and great, but what ended up happening was, when they came to the studio, you know, I was really being really low key and mellow and, you know, you just want to hear their voice. And I had kind of a routine set up. A couple of the people were just super nervous. They were just, I don't know if it was the gear that was intimidating, but they were just really nervous. And I could totally understand that. And I was just trying to, you know, be as mellow. And I could never tell how well their voice sounded because they were too nervous and you could hear it cracking. Just a simple, hey, let's scat along with this, or why don't you just sing along with that? And it, it didn't work out. There's like three people like that I could just tell were really, really nervous.
And you did it here?
Yeah, we did it here. And it was really mellow. There was a couple of them that were really good, but not quite right, you know, the right voice, you know, and not quite, you know, whether it's the tonal qualities weren't what I was looking for. They just didn't fit in. And then there was a couple of them that they sent me some examples and their voice sounded really great. And I set up the meeting and then they never showed up.
So, nice.
You're like, okay. And I tried to make it, you know, just as simple and as just really easy for them. But I don't know. I don't know what the secret is to finding talent on Craigslist, but,
well, the secret may be don't try to find talent on Craigslist.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you're lucky enough to have a network, then it's silly if you don't use it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked a long and hard career to build that network, and so.
But I just felt like doing something crazy and just trying to see, you know, cast the net out there and just to see what you could. And I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure somebody could go through the same thing and cast the net and come up with five dynamic vocalists, but
I just had to do something similar for somebody. I had to write songs and certain styles of bands, and I had to go and find singers that would sound pretty good. So I went to MySpace and I looked at all the bands, well, not all, but a lot of the bands, and from friends and whatever, but also just literally searching through bands that sound alike. And I found a couple of good bands, and I listened to the singer. I'm like, no, that's a good voice. I like his voice, and all of them were his. And I contacted them, and actually, all but one was happy to do it, come and sing a track or two.
But MySpace is a great resource because you get to hear them and analyze them without having to meet them and feel any kind of obligation.
And
to
you
them.
Know where they stand exactly.
And they're a little more together when they're on MySpace.
Right. Although I must say, I also have found a couple of guys sounded really great on MySpace, and the character of the voice sounded excellent. But when it came down to the nitty gritty of actually putting it to tape or to hard drive, very much, obviously, it was apparent there was a lot of doctoring going on their records, which was great. I said, oh, you use Melodyne? They're like, oh, no, not really. Well, maybe we had it plugged in. I can't remember. The drummer pipe said, yeah, you had it plugged in. Remember, Jim did it for 7 weeks.
Remember the 4 days? Yeah. Remember the 4 days of downtime every time you sang a song? You ever wonder what that was?
Yeah, that really sucked. Come on, you're done. Come on in. Yeah. You're done. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think, and maybe there is a place, and I haven't really bothered to look on the internet where, you know, you'd think there would be a place kind of like the old recycler classified ads of in the 80s and early 90s where you had just ads upon ads of.
That's MySpace.
Yeah, exactly. MySpace. That's where you got to look at.
That's not what MySpace was originally set up for, but that's what it has become.
Maybe I'll do another. Well, no, I'm going to try the network.
Anybody who's that serious about being a singer.
Yeah.
Is on MySpace.
They are. And if they're not even together enough to do that, then 100 million others have done that. Yeah. So why should you be the one to rescue that person and try to help them? Unless that's your goal, to be a star maker and find somebody just on the street.
But I will say one phenomenon that I found really interesting was the diva syndrome that I found on a couple of these people that responded, and they have like their web page and their blog going and talking about their latest album and everything that they have going on. And then you go listen to it and you're like,
just utter crap.
Oh, it's like, wow, you have nobody who's ever just told you the truth, have you? It's just like, you surround yourself with like a lot of yes people because it's so apparent how bad it is. And just the point of view of, you know, you can just tell by a person's website and the way they're always talking about themselves and I did this and I'm doing that. And, you know, we're going to try to do this and we're doing this showcase. And yeah, it's really good. And thank you guys for hanging in there with me. And it's like
that is just absolute crap.
Who are they talking to? You know, but it really it's you kind of feel sorry for them because you know you just want somebody to go in there and just be truthful with them and say
you just need more Simons of the world.
I guess so. They would do really well.
You know what? I've had all the different experiences in dealing with people like that. Dealing with singers who wanted to move ahead in the business and stuff. And I've played it both ways. I've either been the nice guy who didn't want to hurt their feelings, or I've been the brutally honest guy who was really trying to help, by letting them know how much work they had to do, which was true. And either I was going to tell them or the universe was going to tell them right. a little while later. But, I mean, I'll never forget. Like, I met with this one singer this one time. I have to be very vague about this. Her manager, who was a friend of mine, brought her over. And we were talking about the kind of music she wanted to sing. And she was talking about all the different artists that were out and how she's better at this one than at this style and better than this one at this style. And she had her whole thing about why she didn't like this artist and didn't like that artist. And she was going to do it so much better. And so I sat and I talked to her for, I don't know, close to 2 hours. And I was really intrigued to hear her stuff because she was making it sound like not only did she know why everybody else was terrible, but she was just like the next huge thing. And I do make it my policy to try not to listen to anybody's stuff with them there because that is so awkward. And they're just, you feel them just burrowing laser holes in your face watching to see what your reaction is. So I don't listen to people's stuff while they're there. But after she left, I listened to her stuff and it was just absolutely horrible. It was crap. It was the worst.
Needless to say, she's a big star by now. Yeah.
No, it was pretty obvious that was not going to happen. But so I said to myself, you know what? This is almost like a friend of the family. I know her manager. I don't want to give her bad advice. I don't want her to be wasting her time. But this is really awful. So I gave – I didn't talk to her. I talked to the manager, and I gave him my exact precise feelings about the thing. And he completely agreed, actually, because he
– Really?
Yeah, he heard –
What's he
stuff.
Trying to manage?
Why
then?
Is he managing?
Because she was –
Manage the
cute.
Shame.
She was working in a different part of the industry that he had been managing her for, and she wanted to become a singer.
Oh.
But he ended up telling her my comments, and she got completely just mad and you know, just huge tantrum. And I felt great that I had been honest, honestly. I mean, I would not have been doing her any favors to say, yeah, you're on the right track. I mean, it wasn't even she was on the wrong track. She wasn't even on a track. She was just completely flailing in outer space.
You realize now that on her, you know, bulletin board, she has your words just etched in.
Probably.
And your picture. And your
probably.
Make it so we can make this guy eat crow.
It, you know what? She was very nice. I really wanted to love the stuff. I was completely on her side. I really wanted the stuff to be great.
Yeah.
But it was just like delusional that she had thought this was a future product.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be doing any type of entertainment and you want to make it your career, get some real advice.
But
get
you
some
know what?
Real, get some real.
You can say that. It will never happen. All you have to do, because I've been behind the scenes at Star Search and American Idol and those shows, and what you see on TV is the most entertaining parts of what goes on there. But these people, everyone could line up to take turns and pay a dollar to tell them how much they suck. And you know what? They would never get it. They would never believe it. It just, if people believe they're the next big thing, there is nothing you can do to change your mind. And, you know, one out of a million is right, and it's a good thing nobody changed their mind.
Yeah.
But it's really, I actually find it really depressing and really sad. And I spent a whole lot of time dealing with Star Search because I was working with an artist who was on there as a kid. And I just saw the way the parents were putting the pressure on the kids, and the kids thought this was like their only chance in life. You know, you have like 8-year-old kids thinking if I don't make it, it's over.
Right.
And I found it really, really, really depressing, especially because most of them weren't very good. And it's obvious they're not going anywhere.
Well,
and, you know, I just saw an ad. It's probably already been on by the time this this podcast is posted. But I saw an ad that on Oprah, she was going to have all these amazingly talented kids and talented people. And they showed some little excerpts. And there's like, you know, a 10-year-old girl just belting out some incredibly loud show tune sounding like a miniature Ethel Merman. And, you know, it's very impressive that you have a kid that can make that much noise, I guess. That's very impressive. Congratulations.
But who wants to hear that?
Whoever wants to hear it. Exactly.
People who's don't even want to hear Ethel Merman anymore.
Who's going to pay money to hear that? So your kid might...
I'd pay you not to hear it.
Yeah, me too.
But that's the parents. It's big time the parents. It's a trophy. You know, it's what it is.
It's a trophy,
kids.
But it's not based in anything realistic. There's no career there.
Yeah.
That's not what leads to a career. What leads to a career is having something to say when you're a little older than that. It's a novelty. It's cool if your kid can be that loud. But it's just not leading to a music career. I would need to see any evidence that it ever works.
I think the moral of the story is you just have to be really honest with yourself. If you're going to want to try to do this, just be honest with yourself. And just, because I think deep down, some people know. Not everybody, because you get the people that
are delusional. Well, but also, I mean, we've talked about this a bunch. I mean, certainly in music, if you're doing it, it's because you love it. Otherwise, don't do it. So if you love the music you're making and you think it's amazing, you ought to be happy with that.
Yeah. Right.
It's the ones who aren't happy with that at all, because that isn't actually why they're doing it.
Right.
They're doing it to be big stars.
But at that point,
even if they're great, it doesn't mean anything.
You should only do it if you'd be happy to be doing it and no one else knew you were doing it. And that is a level that most people never rise up to. Most people want something that comes from outside of themselves.
Pop culture is built in a whole
psychology
there.
But the ones who are successful are really the ones who are truly just doing it for themselves.
Yeah, not looking for a reward.
Yeah. Because people sense that. The audience is very intelligent.
Yeah, that's true.
The audience will let you know, but you know, most of the time the audience lets you know by just ignoring you.
Well, you look at someone like Martin and his CD. He writes songs. He loves songs. He has a passion about the songs. And he's doing it because he loves it. That's what he does.
Right. And why he's always been successful.
Right. You see it in the songs. Well, we're going to see. I'm going to try to work my network, and we're going to see about getting a singer, and I'll keep you guys posted on that. Hey, I want to move on because we're kind of running out of time, but I wanted to get to this. We had a listener, Brian from New York, and he wrote in about the podcast, and he really brought up a great point that I want to get your guys' input on. And he was talking about, with the state of the economy, you know, and the recession it looks like that we're heading towards, if that was going to affect anybody here, their studios or their job or their plans on buying any gear, he wanted to know what effect it was having on us in our careers, especially since a lot of us are freelancers. And I just thought that was a really great question. I wanted to bring that up as we head in towards these times. Are you guys looking at your either your gigs or your work or your studio and planning for that at all?
Can I answer just two things? We more than likely are heading into a recession, which is just basically a technical term for two quarters of negative growth for the U.S. economy. And generally, a recession lasts about 10 months. So while it's most probably true we are heading into recession, it necessarily is not the end of the world.
Sure.
And we may – I'm not answering the question, but I'm just saying. So just for people listening, it's like, we may go into recession. It will be a pullback for about 8 or 9 months, but then things will get better. But to answer your question, I'll let everybody else answer that, and I'll chip in later.
Well, let me give you an example.
No. Nice try, though.
All right,
Mr. Diplomat.
What I was going to say was, you know – I think as the economy gets a little tighter and people get a little tighter with their funds, I'll tell you what really looks attractive, like if I'm going to buy gear, is to buy hardware, things that I don't have to worry about, paying the same amount of money to keeping it, you know, going for the next update, you know, like some of the new, you know, boxes that are out, you know, 500 series modules for API or the new solid state logic, their mini box that they have out, things like that, where you know it's hardware. I think make a lot of good sense. You know, when money's getting tight, because you know they hold their value of resale. You know, trying to resell software is just, you can't do it. You know, I mean, do you guys plan on anything like that? I mean, is it going to affect you guys?
I would mostly look for anything. Unfortunately, any fire sales of people selling choice bits of analog or vintage gear. But I wouldn't really be buying now, not because of the recession, because I don't really need it, but I don't see the point of buying if things are pulling back. Why buy a piece of hardware, you know, unless it's a vintage piece,
if you were going to buy an EQ, would you go with a hardware EQ or would you go with a software EQ? I mean,
hardware like that. At this point.
At any
that's
point.
A conversation for another time, but yeah.
No, but seriously.
We've been A-Bing hardware versus software lately, and it's amazing how not close they are.
Yeah.
But I will say this, because things are tighter, it's not that there's any particular piece of gear or software that I need at the moment, but I find myself just turning much more inward, getting better at the gear I already have, because generally that's something that people don't take the time to do. I mean, even if you've mastered a piece of gear at one point, as time goes on, you're going to forget some stuff.
Right.
And I find myself going back, cracking the manuals, even on some really old keyboards. And just, it breathes new life into them. And a lot of times that's like getting a new piece of gear.
Well, that's a great piece of advice.
Unless you have a studio where something is really missing, like if you truly don't own a good vocal mic and vocals are going to be a part of what you do, then absolutely, you know, get a Mojave. To end the conversation.
Actually, I cut a vocal on a Mojave the other day. It was interesting.
They're great. For the price, I'm saying. They're just amazing.
Well, what about you, Andrew?
Yeah.
In your studio, I mean, are you maybe not even planning on getting to it? Are you happy with what you have?
Well, it's a story for another podcast. But, I mean, my studio is always doing stuff. But I don't plan for it. Because, look, the record business is so screwed up even without a recession.
They've been in recession for a long time.
And they're in complete denial about it, which means that if you're working on a major label project, well, they've shrunk their budgets already and has nothing to do with the recession. I mean, the usual wisdom is that in a recession, discretionary income is what goes away first, and therefore spending money on entertainment will go away first because you have to buy the necessities.
Right.
But in the States over the last 20 years, I don't think that's true. I think what people do is they try and save money on food and then they want an escape. And they still will buy – well, they don't buy music anymore at all. But they will still go see movies.
Or look at video games. I mean, video games are huge.
Yeah. I mean, Grand Theft Auto 4 made, what, $500 million the first week?
Yeah, something.
Half a billion. Some crazy amount of money like that. And meanwhile, you know, Neil Diamond, which is a record I worked on, so I'm following it and like, oh, great, it's going to be number one this week with sales of 125,000. And they're counting downloads.
Crazy.
Because since whichever album it was, it wasn't going to be number one because it was mostly downloads. I don't remember which album that was, about 6 months ago. They've changed the rules and they count downloads. And, you know, that's number one over Madonna and Mariah Carey, and it's nothing. So I don't know that the recession is going to directly affect the music business. Now, in terms of people who are starting out and have, you know, only a certain amount of money to begin with, yeah, I think buying hardware short, that makes sense. And also you might want to jump on it because the dollar is so weak and none of it is made here. So the prices are going to climb.
Yeah.
Because other countries are not going to sell it for the same dollar amounts they used to because it's not worth anything. So, yeah, buy hardware, sure.
I think the other thing, too, is as times are getting tough, I think you got to look at your studio and actually you should try to make it work for you, you know? If you can figure out a way to get some gigs, figure out a way to dig up some work – why not? Why not get the studio to work for you? There's no reason why it shouldn't.
And sometimes you got to spend money to make money, you know? I mean, it's why I bought a console. It was a huge amount of money, but there are a lot of projects I've done there with these shrinking budgets where instead of, you know, it used to be there's this much for the engineer and then this much for the studio. Now it's like, look, we have this many dollars. We give it to you. You give us back a record. Done. I don't care where you do it. I don't care what you do it on.
Right.
And so if you have to shell out money for the studio, you're not going to make any money at all, because those budgets are getting smaller. Right. So it does make sense to actually invest if you've got some work. But don't go nuts thinking if you get the equipment, you're going to get the work.
Yeah, it does. You're right.
And don't get the equipment and not learn the equipment. I mean, you have to – just buying it doesn't mean you're going to
be great at it.
I think
– you definitely have to know these days. It's good.
There's definitely an art to getting work. There's definitely an art to work in your network. Well, actually, Tom, you're a – you know, I work with Tom and Tom does a lot of animation and you work your network pretty good. I mean, I know he does a lot of voice recordings for animation and things like that. You have any tips on, you know, giving people a little nugget of how to get some jobs, or are you looking for a nugget?
Well, you get him to that hotel first. Yeah. From my perspective, and I think everything that's been mentioned here is really applies, and it really, in some ways, comes down to individuals. You know, your perception, how you deal with things. You know, when things are tight, do you make those adjustments personally, you know, in your household or your business or your whatever? And I think that, and it's obvious that everybody cuts back. When things are slow, everybody cuts back everywhere. To some degrees more in other areas than in some, you know, that might pertain to what you're doing. But, you know, the bottom line is that no matter whether it's a recession or not, everybody's always looking for the money. You know, and I mean, whether it's a gig or it's a money to fund somebody else's project or whatever it is, everybody's always chasing the money. So when money becomes scarce, you know, something's got to give, the balloon's got to burst. And what Bobby was saying potentially is true. There's off, you know, 8, 9, 10 months of recession. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there predicting it's going to be a lot harsher than that. So, you know.
I'm one of those, actually. But yeah, unfortunately. Well,
I am too. I mean, is the glass half full or half empty? Yeah. I tend to always be
the
half.
Their glass is broken.
Yes. I'm probably older than everybody here, so I might be even a little more conservative. But, you know, I've definitely, you know, how I do business and the type of things that I go after. It's like sometimes you're willing to go after the little things, and then there's other times when, you know, you get a chance at some of the bigger projects and, you know, you go for them. You don't really ever know if you're going to get them or not. You just keep those doors and windows open and keep talking to as many people as you can. And in fact, one of my contacts, who has a studio, and he represents a studio, an animation studio, I told him today, look, you need to be talking to this person over here, because it's really a case of it's going to be the right place at the right time, because there's so many things happening. They're kind of scattered because they're working on so many deals. They're pushing them all. They're inching them all forward rather than just projecting one of them and then letting the rest of them follow. You just need to stay in touch with them, because it's important that they don't forget who you are. They need also probably need to see you, you know, as Andrew and I talked about this briefly before the podcast, is, you know, is making sure that you come face to face with people for no other reason than, hi, you know, how you doing? What's going on? Great. Good to see you. You know, here's what I'm doing. You know, I'll email you in a few weeks or whatever. Just, you have to do it. And it's hard because we don't always do it.
You know, that's a great point, is getting FaceTime. You know, if you're going to try to make your studio to work for you, then you better be out there meeting bands. You better be out there just being, you know, having a presence out there.
That's leaning towards the point I was going to bring up, diversification. If you're in the music industry or in the production business or whatever it is, I'm talking for myself. I have a studio, and just recently I bought a PC, a computer, Macintosh actually, and made an FTP server set up so that I could supply a mastering, digital mastering, to people that have music libraries. And I have two guys that master music for people. But it's a diversification, because I primarily make money writing music these days. But sometimes, if times get tough, you know, and the music gig's not there because I primarily write music for advertising,
right,
people maybe not advertising as much, you know, they're cutting back on that. I'll be doing mastering, or I'll be doing maybe a mixing, a mixing job or an engineering job for somebody. It's good to keep hone your skills when you're not really busy. If there's downtime for people in a recession or whatever, I really think it's really good to hone your skills, get better at your craft, learn that manual, you know, read the manual of your keyboard, so when a client comes in, you know how to kick its ass, or learn how to be a really good digital editor, or learn maybe how to do video editing or sweetening, or learn another aspect, because diversification is the key to success, to succeeding through a recession of any type. And having all your eggs in one basket, obviously the cliche, is not a good idea. But I think the way the world is going, definitely the way the US is going to go, and the way the world is already going, we're all going to have to be able to do more than one thing. I'm already on my third career in my life, more or less, you know. So I think in a different aspect.
How is that stripping for? How's
well,
that thing going?
You know, I can't get into those tights. You know, they're just a bit too small for me.
One thing I'll add on to what Bobby was saying before it got silly is something I've discovered recently is there are a lot of programs, you know, video editing programs, animation programs, just all kinds of programs that'll give you now a 30-day trial download, including some really sophisticated applications. I mean, real high-end stuff. And you can now, for free, basically explore other career options that might tie into what your main career is. You know, I was playing with a lot of 3D animation stuff, you know, which has nothing to do with music, but obviously can tie in with things you could do on MySpace or YouTube or whatever.
What program?
Maya. Pretty amazing. Which I had known Maya years and years ago, but it's changed a lot since I first learned it. But, you know, all the Adobe stuff, they have trials. A lot of huge program suites now have trials, which they didn't used to. Used to be you bought it or not.
Right.
And now you don't have to. And it's a really cool way. In a month, you can figure out whether something actually has some promise for you or not.
But also, I'd like to point out, because, I mean, Rob made a point earlier about don't try and be everything to everybody. And then, you know, Bobby's saying, well, diversify. But I think they actually go together, because you're getting the mastering work for people's music libraries because people know of your music libraries.
Right.
Not because all of a sudden, oh, yeah, and I master too.
No, right.
You know, you have expertise with that anyway. So you diversify within your own scope.
Field. Right, you build on your own strengths.
So, I mean,
I'm painting houses as well. But
yeah, but that's an old debt. That's different.
No, that's really, you're right, because like I learned how to edit first, and I used my editing chops to go into a lot of different areas where people need music editing, sound effects editing. Eventually, I went into, you know, mixing and landed the gigs that I have now, and it all started with learning how to edit.
Yeah, but there's a progression exactly. there, and it's Absolutely. All your work is still based on you and what people know you're good at.
Yeah.
And it's important to keep that in mind and not just think, well, I'll learn this program over here, and then I'll get a bunch of work doing that too. You won't unless there's a connection to what
you're
doing
right.
anyway.
And you better learn it really well. And you know what? If you're going to be an editor, just learn how to keep things in tempo. I can't tell you how many times I've had to do music editing because the other editor just couldn't find the downbeat, couldn't make it work. And it just, if you just concentrate on just the simple things, just the basics, then you can build upon them.
Now I know what I've been doing wrong all the time.
What's a downbeat?
I thought that's when you're a bummer. Isn't that a downbeat?
Yeah.
That's new hardware. So, forget the downbeat.
But, it's a jazz magazine.
The other piece of advice, if you're like wanting to buy a computer, and you're wanting to make some money, you can't go wrong with getting a notebook. You know, if you really want to not spend a lot of money, but be able to do things, because I can tell you, every notebook computer I've ever bought has paid for itself, you know, several times over. And having the mobility to be able to go to clients, and whether you're doing editing or whatever you're doing, it really adds a lot and really helps you get those jobs, whatever those jobs
are. As long as you understand that the notebook will be slower than the equivalent desktop machine.
That's true, but when you're talking about, you know, doing, you know, certain jobs, especially if you're doing, you know, small little things and you're just starting out, it'll pay for itself.
I definitely think it's important, but if you're primarily not going to be moving around and you need the horsepower, like Maya is a good example. You know, mess around with Maya on a notebook or what's supposed to be a comparable desktop, and you'll see a huge performance difference.
All those people from Craigslist, the vocal people, didn't notice the difference.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, but with today's, especially with like the MacBook Pro, because I run like Moto and Lightwave. Those are the two programs that I like to use. It runs great. I can do a flying logo on my notebook. I just think there's a certain amount of mobility that if you're really a go-getter and if you really go out there and if you really want to make it, there's something about bringing your stuff with you.
By the time this podcast posts, I will be on a trip and I'm bringing two, I carry a Mac and a PC laptop. I mean, I'm like super geek. I get to the airport and the security people, they look at me like, okay, that's something we don't see too often. I used to be the only guy with the computer on the plane. Now I'm the guy with two computers on the plane.
One-upmanship.
Yeah, but I can't live without them, and I use them for very different things. And neither one of them is particularly small or lightweight, but yeah, I mean, it's necessary.
I'm just seeing Rob sitting on the airplane and asking the guy next to him, do you mind if I use your tray?
Well, actually, you know what? My PC laptop is a Fujitsu, and I think Andrew has the same one.
It's huge.
It's huge, but also, I mean, it's got a beautiful screen. It's incredible, but it also, it's basically a desktop replacement, so it doesn't even have a mobile processor, so it gives off a huge amount of heat.
Yeah, you can cook.
You can cook. I have had people sitting in the seat next to me ask if I could avert my laptop so that they wouldn't get burned during the flight. Because it's basically there. It's like just leaving a hairdryer on, just aimed at the person next to you. So then I find myself putting my left hand next to the fan, and I can only do it for a few minutes because then my hand starts to burn.
Gee, that's so ridiculous.
It's like bringing a fireplace onto the plane.
Yeah, but that said, you do get 7 minutes on the battery. So
yeah. It's
pretty good.
But you know what? But that thing is fast. That is a fast laptop.
Well, we're going to wrap
up. I'm not sure what the lesson is in there, but learn it, whatever
Well,
it is.
Don't fly next to you.
Well, yeah, that's a good lesson.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know what the lesson is on the economy that's coming up, but we're all going to just stand by and see how it happens. I know a lot of us do a lot of freelance, so it'll be really interesting to see how this affects the jobs that come up and what's happening. But you know, hopefully, if you just if you just really practice your craft and you hone in on one thing and then look for opportunities, you should be able to be okay.
I mean, I think the thing to keep in mind though is also that the industries we're in follow the curve sometimes by several months. So if you start seeing, oh man, the economy's picking up, don't get too excited because it's going to take months before that trickles back down into the production side of things too.
Very true.
So don't buy that Waves Mercury bundle then.
No. Hold off. No, hold off.
Buy a car instead.
All right, gang. Well, we're going to be wrapping it up. And Rob, you working on anything interesting that you can talk about? Are you still?
Well, we did finish up an interactive game that we were talking about with Scott last time he was here.
Right.
And I don't think it's actually released yet, so we can't talk about it, but it'll be in stores really soon, and then I'll be able to talk about it. And we're now starting up another game for the same studio.
Oh,
so
great.
All of a sudden, these interactive projects have been a good little kind of bread and butter work kind of thing.
Right.
Huge amount of work because we're doing basically sound-alikes of songs,
yeah.
And it's really, really complicated stuff because it's not – just for a CD, it has to fit into how a game operates. So
right. That's where money is right now. So
that's been pretty cool. And the huge project that I'm starting on for myself, talking about sort of moving out of your comfort zone and trying new things, within the next podcast to two podcasts, I'll be able to talk about that. But it's something that I started last year, and it's finally becoming a reality.
Great.
And so we'll be able to talk about that soon.
Great. Andrew, I know you just mentioned Neil Diamond.
Well, yeah, Neil Diamond record is out, which
great.
Was...
What's the name of it?
It's called Home Before Dark.
Home Before Dark.
And it's a cool record. It's all new songs and cut with an amazing band, a couple of the guys from Tom Petty's band, Ben Montench.
Oh, great.
And it's really good, and I track most of it and mix some of it, and so that's doing well.
Oh, great. Which tracks did you mix?
You know what? It was so late
that
it's not.
The ones that sound like this.
Yeah, exactly. it's not even in the artwork. And the other guy who was mixing did a fantastic job. Right. It was just a time crunch thing. So it doesn't matter. It's,
okay.
You know.
And you cut it there. You track the band?
I track most of it, yeah.
Yeah, where did you track it?
Neil has a studio. So
very
at
nice.
His place. So, but it's great. And it's doing really well. And he's off on tour now. And, you know.
That's great.
He would have a studio, wouldn't he? Right.
Yeah.
Bobby?
I'm doing a couple of projects. I'm actually doing a very interesting international project. I can't really disclose it because it's obviously proprietary, but song-based sort of thing. And I'm going to New York. I'm up for another one this year. So we'll see.
All right.
Cool. So we'll see.
Why don't you tell people what we're talking about if they've never...
I write music for a show called One Life to Live. It's a daytime soap opera, and it's been nominated for an Emmy this year. It was last year when I went there and got the tux, rented the tux to no avail. Hopefully this year will be something. Anyway, so that's my little 2 cents thing.
That's great.
Fun.
What you got, Mike?
Let's see. I'm...
Late for work.
Yeah. I'm working with Tom, so yeah.
Tom, are you able to talk about any of this stuff? Not that Mike can talk about
probably,
what he's doing with you tonight.
Probably the next time I come back, things will be hopefully way different. But it's in talking about stuff, about being open, I'm this thing that we're doing tonight is actually something it's coming from Korea to here to be posted. And it's tied into a Korean toy company. Hey, look, if it comes to you, don't.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Welcome. But
next time, if you see a big smile on Tom's face, then you'll know.
Yeah. Okay. But that's, you know, and that's just one of the many things. It's because being freelance, you get as many things in the pipeline as possible. And hopefully, you know, you have the opportunity to piss somebody off down the road by saying, I can't do your project now,
right.
You know, because I got so much other work.
Hey,
so.
You know, before we go, I gotta mention this, and this is a really appropriate, you know, find a group of guys or a group of friends and then help each other out. You know, I should have said that, but you know, if you help each other out and really cover each other's back, it's going to come back to you, because I know I have a lot of friends. Tom's one of them, and I have a really good group of of guys that I can go to and you know, do stuff for them, and they can help me out. And it's always paid back. So,
well, that's why we were surprised when you talked about doing this Craigslist thing, because it's not like you don't have a network that you could have tapped into.
Well, no, that's true too. But that, you know, the
but
Craigslist,
people wasn't calling him back. That's basically it. He called us, or we didn't. He said,
"That's right."
Well, I assumed you guys were calling.
And what have you been working on? Because you haven't talked about that recently.
Let's see. Well, I'm speaking of diversifying. I do a lot of GPS audio tours, and I've had to do so many rewrites and so many scripts that I've now moved into the script writing thing. So the next couple tours, I'm actually going to be writing the script as well as recording, editing, and programming it.
That's great.
You know, it's you know, a couple more bucks, and it just gives you a lot of control, and then you can do different things. So it's, you know, it's a little bit out of my comfort zone, but that's what the spell check is for on, you know, words. So, I mean, come on. you know, finished a couple documentaries, and that went really well. And there's one that's going to be premiering in Vegas in June. It's that documentary on Hank Greenspun that I was telling you guys about at a film festival. And I did another one that was in the Napa Valley Film Festival about 3 weeks ago. That was the one on Pittsburgh. That was really great. So, you know, just doing the same thing. And then I'm working on a major DVD release, which I can't say, but once it comes out, I probably still can't say, but it's major. It's big.
It's big.
So, and that's about it. And other than that, you know, just trying to survive in the economy like everybody else.
And I will say also, Scott does send his regards. He's still off on a big project, and he's eager to come back
India,
and tell
right?
us about it.
Huh? No.
No, he's not.
Anywhere there are llamas.
Exactly. No, but he did specifically tell me to tell everybody hello, and he's checking out the podcast, and he will be back soon.
Yeah, and he's enjoying the food.
And that's huge. All right, well, hey, thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Or you can reach us on our MySpace at myspace.com/audionowcast. Well, for myself and all the guys here, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.